Thank you very much for this kind invitation and for having included amyloidosis in this fantastic Congress. Amyloidosis is sometimes neglected, is underdiagnosed and neglected. I am so worried about the automatic sudden death of the presentation at the end of the time that I decided to start with my final slide. And my final message would be that amyloid R disease is underdiagnosed, but challenging and tricky and treatable, as Dr. Glackman beautifully showed us in the previous talk. Using the term of James Seward, amyloid R disease, as you know, is the prototype of infiltrative cardiovascular disease. And infiltrative cardiovascular disease, cardiomyopathies due to infiltration and also due to storage, are cardiomyopathies that look alike. Amyloid R disease is a great simulator, is an entity able to simulate many other cardiovascular conditions. So we briefly discuss what is it, when should it be suspected, how to reach the final diagnosis, and what is the best treatment. From a pathological point of view, this disease is characterized by the isolation of the myocytes. As you can see, in gray pale, the amyloid, and in dark, red dark, the myocytes. The myocytes are intrinsically, normally functioning from a mechanical and electrical point of view, but the problem is that they are isolated. They cannot communicate each other. This is the problem from an histological point of view at the myocardial level. But don't believe that this infiltration is uniform and diffusely uniform. If you have opportunity to cut hearts, such in this case, explanted hearts, you can easily see that the amyloid, once again in gray pale, tends to aggregate in macro area of infiltration. Please take a look at these four hearts, once again explanted hearts, white or gray pale. The pattern, the histological, the macrological profiles are different. However, in many cases, macro aggregates of amyloid are present. This is an important point, since this type of macro aggregation is the cause of some of the typical non-invasive examination in this disease. For example, the presence of pseudo-infarctional pattern on electrocardiogram is simply due to this type of scar without scar, scar from an electrical point of view. Again, sometimes in magnetic resonance, you can see that the gadolinium accumulates in the subendocardial zones, as here, but other times you can see that gadoliniums accumulate in this such a strange way, a sort of scar without thinning of the ventricle. And in this paper, we compared the magnetic resonance appearance and the macroscopic appearance of the disease, and here you can see the results. As Helene talked us just before, there are three main entities from a cardiological point of view: AL amyloidosis and transthyretin-related amyloidosis, which can be familial or can be wild-type, the so-called senile systemic amyloidosis. The first question: AL, wild-type, and senile, wild-type and hereditary amyloidosis are the same disease, or important differences do exist? Recently, we had the opportunity to review our cohort of patients. It's a large cohort due to two Italian major centers. And please take note of the clinical similarities and differences. AL on your left, senile and hereditary. The age is quite different. The mean age is 60 years here, 75 and 55. Senile systemic amyloidosis is a disease of the old male, man, whereas a ratio 1:1 is present in AL, amyloidosis. At the presentation, the vast majority of patients with AL are in severe congestive heart failure. At presentation, the vast majority of hereditary TTR patients have an advanced autonomic impairment without necessarily signs of heart failure. Kidney involvement is the rule in AL, is the exception in transthyretin-related amyloidosis. Obviously, the echocardiogram is the non-invasive main tool of diagnosis and recognizes this disease. And typically, the echocardiogram simulates the echocardiogram of a hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. However, once again, there are important differences in the echocardiographic, morphological, and functional profile of these three entities, AL, senile, and hereditary. Please take note, the average diastolic thickness of the interventricular septum is 16 in AL, is 20 in the senile. Ejection fraction is at the lower normal range in AL, is depressed in senile. A restrictive filling pattern is definitely frequent in AL, but not so frequent in the transthyretin-related types. One could imagine, due to the high degree of infiltration in transthyretin-related amyloid heart disease, that the prognosis could be worse in transthyretin-related heart disease. But this is not true. You can see here overall survival adjusted for multi-organ involvement in our service, that prognosis is absolutely ominous in AL, but not so ominous in TTR. We censored the data at the moment of heart transplantation, since, as you know, liver transplantation or combined heart and liver transplantation is the surgical gene therapy on this disease. So why the prognosis is worse in AL, where in AL the degree of increased thickness is lesser than the other? Many authors believe that there is a role of direct toxic effect of circulating light chains. So one, we must think at this disease not only in terms of infiltration, but also in terms of toxic effects of circulating light chains. Of course, the duration and rapidity of amyloid accumulation can make the difference. This disease is generally considered the prototype of restrictive cardiomyopathy. But the question is, are we sure that hemodynamic is impaired in this disease? Please consider once again our service, our patients. Each measure of diastolic function in each row. Please note the D plateau, the marker of restrictive cardiomyopathy, at rest, of course, is present in only 3% of the cases. And here we can see the relative frequency of the other indexes of left ventricular function. At least one marker is abnormal in no more than 3/4 of the patients. But more importantly, there are important differences within the etiological categories. AL cardiomyopathy tends to show a higher and frequent impairment in terms of restriction, whereas transthyretin-related cardiomyopathies, much the hemodynamic impairment in TTR-related cardiomyopathy is definitely less frequent. And probably the direct toxic effect of circulating light chain once again makes the difference. When should this disease be suspected? Once again, our series. If the final diagnosis of amyloidotic cardiomyopathy was performed in 233 cases, why this high number of cases? In these cases, the final diagnosis is the result of a cardiological screening starting from other specialists, hematologist, neurologist, nephrologist. But in 80 out of 200 patients, the final diagnosis of amyloid eye disease is the result of a diagnostic process prompted by initial diagnosis, a generic initial diagnosis of heart failure or hypertensive heart disease or hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. As you know, in every disease, there are two steps in the diagnostic process. The first step is the suspicion, and the second step is the definite final diagnosis. In some diseases, for example, ischemic heart disease, it's absolutely easy to reach the first threshold and can be more problematic to reach the second one. But the contrary happens in amyloidosis. In amyloidosis, the problem is elaborating the clinical suspicion. When you have elaborated the clinical suspicion, it's relatively easy to reach the final phase of definite diagnosis. Don't believe that these highly specific signs are frequent in the daily practice. Don't believe. This can represent a cultural barrier. If you imagine that all your amyloidotic patients have petechia or macrographia, you are not in the right phase to diagnose amyloidosis or disease. Another cultural barrier. Hereditary transthyretin-related amyloidosis tends to be considered a neurological disease where neurosensomotorial impairment is the main clinical finding. This is true, but we have to consider that in this disease, a strong genotype-phenotype correlation does exist. And here you can see the spectrum. At your left, the so-called neurologic mutation, typically the 30-MET mutation, the Portuguese type of amyloidosis, which more frequently carries on a neurologic phenotype. But at the other extreme of the spectrum, there are some mutations, typically 122 valine, which is probably the most frequent cardiomyopathy in the black Americans, and 68 leucine or 60 alanine among Caucasian people. And these are mutations which produce an exclusively cardiac phenotype. Once again, consider the situation in Italy. 154 patients with hereditary amyloidosis, 66 families, mainly men, mean age at diagnosis 52, age at onset of neurological or cardiological symptoms 49. So in this large cohort of patients, due to more than 20 different mutations, there are three distinct phenotypes. And the neurologic, purely neurologic phenotype is only in one-third of the patients, whereas a purely cardiac phenotype is present in about 12% of the patients. And this is a problem. Since these cases, what is the general profile of this patient with an extremely, exclusively cardiac phenotype? They are male, the average age is 62, no family history, generally, heart failure symptoms, concentric left ventricular hypertrophy, mild LV dilatation, mild LV systolic dysfunction. And this is a problem, since this profile can simulate the profile of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. This is an example of an echocardiogram showing an apparently left ventricular hypertrophy. But what is the problem? The obvious is obvious. Look elsewhere. So we have to look for the infiltrative phenotype hidden within the hypertrophic phenotype. How to catch these sort of red flags, able to orient our suspicion? There are many potentially useful red flags. The increased thickness of the right ventricle, not only the left ventricle, the granular sparkling of the myocardium, the increased thickness of intraatrial septum, the presence, the coexistence of a small pericardial infusion, and the increased thickness of AV valves. This is a very important finding. In many patients with amyloid heart disease, AV valves are thickened, since the infiltration is related not only to the myocardium, but also to the AV valves. Of course, if you are able to measure strain and strain rate, you can detect a higher degree of impairment in deformation indexes in amyloid heart disease. Please note, for the same or about the same level of increased parietal thickness, a higher degree of deformation in amyloid heart disease. What about the electrocardiogram? Typically, the electrocardiogram is considered quite useful in the differential diagnosis between, for example, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy and amyloid heart disease. For the same echocardiographic pattern, two deeply different electrocardiogram, normal or low voltage here, definite hypertrophy here. But the problem, once again, is related to the etiology of the amyloid heart disease. This concept, this usefulness of low QRS voltage is absolutely true in AL amyloidosis. 60% of the patients show low QRS voltage. But the problem is that in senile and in hereditary TTR amyloidosis, the frequency of low QRS voltage is definitely low, 40% here, 25% here. So in many cases, for example, of senile amyloidosis, of hereditary amyloidosis due to 122 or 68 leucine, so black and white people, you can observe this kind of echocardiogram associated with normal or slightly hypertrophic electrocardiogram or left bundle branch block. So please do not abandon the diagnosis of amyloid heart disease in a typical clinical context only because the electrocardiogram does not show low QRS voltage. What about magnetic resonance? Very useful in the daily practice. Why is it so useful? Since there is a typical characteristic kinetic of the gadolinium, there is a high avidity for gadolinium of the amyloidotic myocardium. At a short T1, large part of the myocardium goes to the null point earlier than the LV blood pool, so myocardium gets black earlier than blood, since the myocardium is absolutely avid of gadolinium. And that is really a very useful hallmark. And the other useful hallmark from a magnetic resonance point of view is the presence, when presence, of subendocardial accumulation of the late GET. Two more minutes. There is another examination absolutely important in our experience, and this is DPD scintigraphy. Helen just commented that sub-scintigraphy is absolutely useful examination to detect the whole body accumulation of amyloidosis is unable to detect heart amyloidosis. Vice versa, the simple bone scintigraphy, very diffuse examination, widely diffuse and very cheap examination, can detect amyloid heart disease. This in A is the case of a normal patient after DPD injection. The DPD tends to accumulate in the bones. Here, in C and D, you can see patients with TTR-related amyloidosis. In TTR-related amyloid heart disease, the myocardium becomes so avid of the tracer, of DPD, that the tracer is uptaken by the myocardiums and tends not to accumulate in the bones. This is an important thing. For example, the degree of tracer uptake is directly related to the average thickness of the left ventricle and inversely related to the left ventricle in this disease. The sensitivity of this disease is of this technique is particularly high. Here you can see a group of patients with definitely, from a echocardiographic point of view, cardiac amyloidosis, and patients without any echocardiographic signs of amyloid disease. In this group, in 5 to 6 patients, the uptake of the tracer is present, despite normal electrocardiogram and normal echocardiogram. But there is a paradox. This uptake of DPD scintigraphy takes place only when the accumulation of amyloidosis is due to TTR amyloidosis. For the same degree of infiltration, the DPD scintigraphy, thank you very much, is positive. Is positive. I was not able to avoid this dramatic. However, just 30 seconds. You can see the paradox. The same type of cardiomyopathy, ATTR on the left and AL on the right. In this case, at TTR, the myocardium uptakes the tracer. Here, no myocardium uptaking, and only the bones are depicted. The accuracy for the differential diagnosis from TTR and AL is quite high. But apart from the usefulness in the differential diagnosis of this etiology, we strongly believe that this scintigraphy can be particularly useful in the daily practice in identifying, or at least in suspecting, the presence of senile amyloidosis or TTR amyloidosis, hereditary TTR due to, with exclusively cardiac phenotype, for example, African-American peoples or Caucasian with 68 leucine, since in this patient, for example, senile amyloidosis, a previous diagnosis of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, but a strong uptake of the tracer. We recently compared these findings in four groups of patients, senile, ATTR with cardiac phenotype, non-amyloidotic cardiomyopathy, I mean hypertensive cardiomyopathy or hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, and these are the encouraging, in our opinion, results. So, dear colleagues, challenging, tricky, and as we previously heard, curable disease. Thank you.